All right, ready to dive into another case. This one's a Tennessee Supreme Court decision, State v. Fleming.
Oh, this is a good one. It really gets into some fundamental questions about criminal law. Like, what exactly makes something a deadly weapon?
Yeah, we've got the trial transcripts, court opinions, the whole shebang. And it all boils down to whether fists can actually be considered deadly weapons.
Right, and it has some serious implications. I mean, we're talking about the possibility of an 18-year prison sentence based on how the law interprets a couple of words.
18 years. Wow. Okay, so let's break this down for everyone listening. The case centers on an assault and robbery. We've got four guys who chase down and beat up a man named Derek Smith.
And two of them, Robinson and Beatty, they actually steal Smith's stuff while he's down.
Right, but the defendant we're focusing on, Eric Fleming, he's only seen taking part in the beating, not the actual robbery.
And get this, the only person who puts Fleming at the scene is Beatty, who cut a deal for himself to testify. So, you know, right off the bat, we've got some questions about how reliable that testimony really is.
Interesting. So how do the deadly weapons come into play here?
Well, the state, they were going for a harsher sentence. So they hit Fleming with a charge of especially aggravated robbery.
Okay.
And their argument, his fists and feet were deadly weapons under Tennessee law.
Hmm. I mean, that seems kind of iffy. Aren't fists just, you know, part of your body? How can they be a weapon, legally speaking?
That's exactly what the defense argued. They said fists and feet, they're not some kind of external weapon. They're not designed to inflict injury. And that design part is important because it's right there in the Tennessee law that defines a deadly weapon.
So let's look at the actual law. Tennessee Code 3911106A5B defines a deadly weapon as a firearm or anything manifestly designed, made, or adapted for the purpose of inflicting death or serious bodily injury. Pretty clear, right? A firearm, yes. Fists, not so much.
And the Tennessee Supreme Court, they agreed. They zeroed in on that word design. They said, look, that implies intentionality, a separate object, not just your body.
Mm.
And the court worried that if you interpreted the law too broadly, you'd basically be erasing the line between simple assault and aggravated assault.
So, like, every bar fight could suddenly be a felony.
Exactly. The court even said it straight out, that kind of broad interpretation would lead to an absurd result, the merger of simple and aggravated offenses. They were pretty convinced that's not what lawmakers had in mind at all.
So the court's saying, let's be real here, but wait, this case gets even trickier. There's this other legal concept called facilitation.
Oh yeah, that's crucial.
So even if Fleming didn't actually steal anything himself, could he still be guilty of helping the others pull off the robbery?
That's the big question with facilitation. It really comes down to intent, right? Did he know what was going on? Was he there to help make the robbery happen, even if he didn't personally take anything?
Yeah, that raises some really interesting points about, you know, where's the line between just being present at a crime and actually helping it happen?
Right, and that's a question that comes up in legal cases all the time. Where do you draw that line? And in Fleming's case, well, the jury didn't even get the chance to consider facilitation. It wasn't given to them as a possible charge. So they had to decide, was he guilty of this super serious robbery charge or was he totally innocent? There was no middle ground.
Hmm. That seems kind of unfair, doesn't it? What if they thought, okay, maybe Fleming was there, maybe he was involved in the beating, but he didn't actually want to help with the robbery?
And that's exactly why the Court of Criminal Appeals decided to overturn the original guilty verdict. They said, hold on, the jury didn't have all the information they needed to make a fair decision. They needed to be able to consider all the different legal possibilities.
I see. So this case isn't just about whether fists are deadly weapons. It's about making sure juries have clear instructions and can think about all the different sides of the law, right?
You got it. And, you know, it also shows you what can happen when prosecutors go for the most serious charge right away. I mean, in Fleming's case, they might have actually hurt their own case by pushing for that really heavy robbery charge. If they had given the jury the option of a lesser charge, like facilitation, maybe they would have gotten a conviction.
That's a good point. It's like sometimes taking a more nuanced approach can lead to a more just outcome, even in a case involving violence.
Absolutely. And for prosecutors, State v. Fleming is like a cautionary tale. It reminds them that you can't always assume a jury is going to see things your way. You have to be prepared for different interpretations of the facts and the law, and you have to make sure the jury has all the tools they need to come to a fair conclusion.
So this case, it's a victory for the defense, right? Does this mean fists and feet can never be considered deadly weapons?
Well, it's not quite that black and white. The Tennessee Supreme Court, they expressed some serious concerns about calling fists and feet deadly weapons all the time, but they didn't completely rule it out.
Okay, so they left the door open a little bit.
Yeah. They emphasized that it depends on the context, on the situation. If the prosecution can show that the defendant was using their fists or feet to cause serious harm, and if they actually had the power to do that kind of harm, well, then maybe deadly weapon could still apply.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all rule.
Exactly. Every case is different. You have to look at the specifics. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes these legal precedents so interesting, you know? It's not about creating hard and fast rules for every single situation. It's about setting up a framework, some guidelines for how to think about things.
I see. It's about principles, not just rules. So we've talked about how this case affects lawyers and prosecutors, but what about regular people? How does this whole deadly weapon interpretation affect them?
That's a great question. And for me, one of the biggest takeaways from this case is that the law, it's not always so clear-cut. There are often gray areas. You have to really think things through and be careful about how you interpret things.
Right. So just because a law seems simple doesn't mean it's always easy to figure out how it applies in the real world.
And it also highlights why it's so important to know your rights, to understand the law. You might assume something is or isn't a crime, but legally, it might be a lot more complicated than you think.
It's a reminder to not take the law for granted.
I agree. State v. Fleming, at first glance, it's a case about robbery and assault and legal terms. But when you really dig in, it's a story about how the law affects real people's lives. It's about the importance of thinking about those consequences and making sure the legal system is doing what it's supposed to do, protect people's rights and make sure things are fair.
It really makes you think about the human side of these cases. You know, it's not just abstract legal concepts. It's real people's lives that are on the line.
Absolutely. And for law students especially, this case, State v. Fleming, it's like a gold mine. It touches on so many of the big concepts they'll be dealing with, like how to interpret laws, what burden of proof means, how legal precedents work, and how to put together a really strong argument.
Right. And it shows you how much weight even small words can have. I mean, just look at designed in this case. That one word played a huge role in how the law was applied and how the whole case turned out.
Yeah, it's a perfect example of how good legal research and a well-crafted argument can literally change the direction of justice. The lawyers in this case, they had to really dig deep, you know, into past cases, the way laws are written, legal theories, all of that. And their arguments, they actually shaped the court's decision and set a precedent that could be used in tons of cases down the road.
That's pretty amazing when you think about it. It shows you the kind of power lawyers have in the legal system and the responsibility that comes with it.
And it's also a reminder that the law, it's not set in stone, you know? It changes over time as new cases come up, new laws are made, and society's values evolve. And lawyers, judges, legal scholars, they're all playing a role in that evolution.
So State v. Fleming is about robbery and assault, sure. But as we've been talking about, it goes way beyond that. It really forces you to think about what justice means, mm-hmm. how we should interpret the law, and how to make sure the legal system is actually working the way it's supposed to, protecting people's rights and ensuring fairness.
Yeah, and juries, they play such a crucial role in all of this. I mean, think about it. They have to take these complex legal ideas, weigh the evidence, and ultimately decide someone's fate. That's a huge responsibility. In cases like this, they really highlight how important it is for jurors to have clear instructions, to understand the law, and to be able to consider all the different arguments.
So no matter who you are, a lawyer, a law student, or just someone interested in the law, State v. Fleming is a fascinating look at how the legal system works and all the intricacies of interpreting and applying the law.
And it definitely leaves you with some food for thought. Like, what makes something a deadly weapon? Where's the line between being at a crime scene and actually being part of the crime? How can we make sure the legal outcomes are fair and appropriate? These are questions that lawyers and judges are always grappling with, and they're questions that are constantly shaping our legal system.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into State v. Fleming. What are your thoughts on this case? Anything that really stood out to you? We'd love to hear your take on it. Share your thoughts on social media. And be sure to join us next time for another deep dive into a fascinating legal case. Until then, keep those legal minds sharp.